while they repeatedly tried to engage Israel. So again, I think they got the balance wrong there. I don't know why. They did make a finding that a situation of apartheid could arise if Israel does not follow up on the commission's recommendations, but that's all they did. And I don't think that was sufficient, because I think their role was, as part of that communication, to investigate the question of apartheid from a legal perspective and the meaning of apartheid within Article 3 of CERD.
And in this early warning and urgent actions procedure, the committee wrote that it was alarmed by the quote, disregard for the International Court of Justice's orders and various recommendations from the Ad Hoc Conciliation Commission of the Interstate Communication. So CERD last week said, you've totally ignored
Yes,
what the
that's right.
ICJ says, and you've totally ignored what our Conciliation Commission said.
Well, that's what I mentioned that to you with this statement. I found it interesting. I mean, at what point are we going to put the two statements together? Now we CERD and the Ad Hoc Conciliation Commission are two different bodies. CERD is the main treaty body. The case was decided by the Ad Hoc Conciliation Commission, which was an ad hoc body. There's like five members. So they're not the same body. The mechanism creates a different body to decide, if you like. So they're not the same thing. I mean, I was critical also of the Ad Hoc Conciliation Commission, for example, in relation to Gaza. It didn't include CERD's early warning statements, of which by the time it reached its decision, there have been two of them. You mentioned there are two, there are three in total. This is the third. So they didn't include those two in, which I was surprised by that omission as well. They made no mention of genocide or genocide prevention at all. They made no mention of the ICJ provisional measures, which at that point were in place. They made no mention in the relation of apartheid, although the ICJ advisory opinion had not come out by the time the Palestine versus Israel decision was made. There were statements from South Africa and Namibia that were before the ICJ at that point, written statements in July the previous year, oral statements that February. They made no mention of those either. And considering that CERD had spent 25 years fighting apartheid in South Africa and Namibia, it was surprising that their statements were not considered relevant to determining the Palestine versus Israel case, or at least were not included. On the most recent statement, I mean, if we put together, the commission is of the view that those acts may amount to a situation of apartheid if no action is taken by Israel to effectively address the issues raised. So that's what the Ad Hoc Conciliation Commission said. And CERD's most recent statement talks about a flagrant disregard by Israel of the decision of the Ad Hoc Conciliation Commission. So I mean, in terms of a time frame, what the decision in Palestine versus Israel seems to say is that if Israel does not follow its recommendations, then a situation of apartheid is what results. And here we have CERD saying Israel is not following the recommendations of the Ad Hoc Conciliation Commission. So is the committee going to put this together and say that the continuing refusal to follow recommendations of CERD and the Ad Hoc Conciliation Commission means a situation of apartheid exists in the occupied Palestinian territory?
Let's stand back from all this for a minute, David. What's the significance of a committee like CERD for those people who really know nothing about human rights institutions, treaty institutions, international humanitarian and human rights law, who are totally inured to the fact that Israel does what it wants with complete impunity, backed by the United States? The International Court of Justice can say whatever it wants in an advisory opinion, which is, of course, non-binding. It can issue supposedly binding rulings in the South Africa versus Israel genocide case, which is supposedly a binding ruling, but Israel has totally ignored it. And Israel completely ignores anything and everything that it's told to do or urged to do or implored to do, and it's backed by the United States unconditionally. So in this kind of sea of international legal institutions and rights bodies and judicial bodies like the ICJ and the ICC, and of course ICC arrest warrants have just been issued by the pretrial chamber against Netanyahu and Gallant. We'll see if they ever get executed. But a lot of people are kind of cynical about all this. What's the significance of CERD? Like, if CERD were to say this is apartheid, what significance would that be?
Well, I think it's quite a sort of a wide question. I do it's one that, I mean, it's one that come, my students ask me as well. I don't have a single answer to that. I mean, I think in terms of international law, it's cumulative. So there isn't usually a sort of a magic bullet or a single decision in which everything is resolved. Now, I mean, that can happen, but in general, for situations like Palestine, you're not going to get any one answer. So you need a combination of different mechanisms. So CERD has a role. It's not going to give you the answer as a treaty body. It's clearly different to the International Court of Justice. It doesn't issue legally binding judgments, for example. It issues recommendations. So if you like, it has a different legal status to the ICJ. The ICJ is sort of the apex court of the United Nations. So I wouldn't say each legal body is the same, but I would say they all operate within a kind of a general overall system, and where all of these bodies combine to reach determinations on questions like apartheid, or to investigate the question of genocide in Gaza, then I think binding provisional measures combined with actions of the General Assembly, combined with actions of UN treaty bodies like CERD, combined with actions of the Special Rapporteur, then cumulatively they lead to change over time. So we've seen this before. Apartheid in South Africa didn't end until the 1990s. And so it took, I mean, the first UN resolution in relation to apartheid is in the 1940s. Now, I know the occupation of Palestine is 50 years old, and so that's been going on for a very long time. But ultimately, international law has to keep saying what the rules are, keep articulating where there are violations, and I think we need to focus on how each of the components contributes. So that's how I'd see the system overall. In terms of CERD itself, I think it's a hugely significant treaty, because, I mean, a number of reasons. First of all, it was really the first treaty where the Global South stepped in and contributed to international law. I think we're seeing, for example, the genocide case has been taken by South Africa, so we're seeing the significance of when the Global South gets involved. I think that really is the direction international law is taking, and so CERD is the first real, the strongest evidence of that. It was the first international human rights treaty. Its own contributions, you mentioned the early warning, urgent action mechanism, these are just recommendations, they're not a judgment. On the other hand, this system comes from the 90s. It was Rwanda that CERD, after Rwanda, CERD created the system, because in Rwanda it was tied to this sort of state reporting procedure, and by the time it got around to Rwanda in 1994, it was too late. So it said, we don't really want this anymore, where we feel it's too late to intervene. So they created the system. Well, they interpreted the system under the reporting procedure of Article 9 to allow them, where the situation is urgent, to issue statements and to intervene. And so they did it first in relation to Rwanda, and then they did it in relation to Yugoslavia as well. I mentioned the country even visited Yugoslavia and Croatia in the 1990s. They were pretty quick to issue statements in relation to Gaza. The first one was on the 27th of October. So following 7th of October, by the 27th of October, they issued the first statement in relation to the situation in Gaza under this mechanism. Alarm at the scale and the violations. And all of their statements, by the way, have also referenced the Hamas and the hostages and the killings by Hamas as well. They also, I think, they were their first statement pointed out the language as well. So the language of Yoav Gallant, for example, references to human animals. They said that that is language which could incite genocidal actions. Now, they were very early to point out that the language being used by senior Israeli figures. That was 27th of October. Their second statement was the 21st of December 2023. Again, here they really emphasize genocide, and that is significant because CERD monitors the Convention on Elimination of Racial Discrimination, not the Genocide Convention.
I was going to ask you about
Convention.
this, because CERD here, it says CERD calls upon all state parties to fully respect their international obligations, in particular those arising from the convention, the CERD convention, the Convention on the Prevention and Punishment of the Crime of Genocide, and Common Article 1 of the four Geneva Conventions. So CERD, it's stepping beyond what its treaty.
And that's not that didn't start here. The Genocide Convention from 1948 doesn't have a treaty body. So unlike CERD, which was drafted in 65 and created a treaty body, the Genocide Convention doesn't have a treaty body. There's no committee on the prevention and punishment of genocide. So all the Genocide Convention has is the ICJ. That's the only treaty body that's in the Genocide Convention. So CERD states weren't willing to take cases under the Genocide Convention that began. I mean, there were in the 90s, the first cases emerged before the ICJ, and then we had the Gambia versus Myanmar, where another state stepped up for the first time, and then we had South Africa. But before that happened, in the 90s, we didn't really get the use of the ICJ to the same extent. So CERD did that. So they took on a role of genocide prevention in the absence of a UN treaty body, and they issued in 2005 a declaration on the prevention of genocide. So CERD has expertise on genocide prevention. So part of the early warning mechanism is genocide prevention. They created expertise around that, indicators around that, and a declaration in 2005 on the prevention of genocide. So that's in relation to their experience in Rwanda, Burundi, and even other situations which could have arise, which they figured could amount to genocide, like the DRC, for example. They issued a statement there about 20 years ago, again, concerns that it could amount to genocide. So that's been part of what they do since the early 1990s. And then when it came to the situation in Gaza, statement one spoke about the language, which they were alarmed at. And then statement two brought in the Genocide Convention, and that was in December, where they spoke about obligations of third states in relation to the prevention of genocide. And they put genocide much more central to that second statement in December. That was the 21st of December. And then about a week later, we had the South Africa case. So South Africa then took its case. So before South Africa took its case, CERD had issued two statements under this mechanism. Now, as I said, it's not the same as the ICJ, it's not a binding judgment, but that's a very significant warning in relation to genocide that came from a UN treaty body. And South Africa listened, read those statements. And we know they did, because if you look at South Africa's application to the ICJ, it references both of those statements. The statements, CERD statements, are in the South Africa case. So these, I think it illustrates the importance of what CERD does. Even though it's not necessarily a binding judgment, it's very important, and it was part of South Africa's, I think, decision to bring the case against Israel before the ICJ, and it's there in the footnotes.
David, is it your view as an academic that Israel practices the crime of apartheid?
Yeah, you've asked me this before. I said I, what I as a CERD commentator, I've said to you before that I wanted to wait until CERD had reached its decision, because I felt that, I mean, my understanding of apartheid has been in the context of CERD, and there was a case before the committee which set out allegations, I suppose, or which made a complaint or made a case that the situation in the OPT amounted to apartheid. I think my role, or certainly the role I undertook in that regard, was to carefully follow the mechanism, to discuss the procedure, and to point out the significance. So I did publish an article on the legal consequences if a determination of apartheid were to be reached under the Palestine versus Israel case, and that's in the Melbourne Journal of International Law. But I didn't say whether situation was apartheid. I said that these are the legal consequences that arise under the treaty if a finding of apartheid is reached. So
But based on the wider definition of apartheid.
Now that the decision has been made, I think I mean, in my opinion, I've been of the opinion for a long time that it is a situation of apartheid. So yes, I think it is. And I think that that is what the Ad Hoc Conciliation Commission should have found. But I think they should have given us an understanding of what apartheid is, a legal understanding under the terms of the convention and which against to measure it. And then I think they should have reached a determination of apartheid. And I don't say that in a vacuum. I think that the evidence of others is there. So there is a range of NGO reports from international, Israeli, and Palestinian, all of which believe the situation is apartheid. There's a number of UN Special Rapporteur reports which believe that the situation is apartheid and have made legal arguments as to why that is the case. There are senior Israeli figures, the former head of the Mossad, ambassadors of Israel to South Africa, for example, who have said that the situation is apartheid. So what's different, what was before CERD, was to how you make that legal determination. And that was really the task of the commission in relation to Article 3. And they didn't fulfill the task, not in not reaching a finding of apartheid, which is up to them to make that finding or not, but in not setting out how you make a finding of apartheid. So how do you do it under CERT? That was their task, and they didn't fulfill that aspect of their task. How do you do it? And then you decide it. In my opinion, it is a situation of apartheid, because I think that's what the settlements create. If you look at what the ICJ decided in relation to Article 3, it's about it's the settlements. The Article 3, the violation of Article 3, situation of apartheid, is linked to the settlement policy, and that it is the settlement policy that creates the situation of apartheid in the occupied Palestinian territory. And that's my view.
And I mean, in this early warning statement, there are numerous comments about the situation with settlements in the occupied Palestinian territories in the West Bank, which kind of spell out a situation of apartheid. I often go back to the statement that was made by the international the committee that oversees the Convention on the Covenant on Civil and Political Rights. And this was back, I think, in 2017, in one of the Covenant on Civil and Political Rights' committee. And they came out with a summation, a paragraph that was just, they didn't use the word apartheid, but they could have. It was the quintessential description, operative description, functional description of apartheid. And so it just seems astonishing that CERD, just the committee, is hesitant to actually make that finding, or even provide any information about how it's analyzing the situation. And one wonders what's going to happen post January 20th. This is a totally different story, but when Trump comes in on January 20th, I'm kind of reckoning that he's going to green light Israel's complete formal annexation of the West Bank. We'll see what happens. But clearly, there's a real drive in Israel to do that, to annex certainly all of Area C. And to drive all of Gazans out of Gaza, that's another story, to completely ethnically cleanse it. But to now, and now they're occupying seemingly permanently, on the path to permanence, occupying Syrian territory, additional territory that they've seized, and they're going to expand their settlements. So one wonders, you know, what kind of fire the Trump administration may put under CERD. And you've got no wisdom on this. Obviously, you're not in communication with them, but one is kind
No.
of wondering what they're going to do.
I find it surprising that CERT seems so, it's out of sync, I think, with the UN, other UN bodies. So the UN Special Rapporteur, I mean, the Michael Link report made a finding of apartheid. So, I mean, it's possible that was only one report, but there have been a number of other UN special procedures which have come in and said the situation is apartheid. If you look at a statement following the ICJ advisory opinion of a number of UN special rapporteurs, warning that the international system is on a knife's edge, and that came in September, after the decision in Palestine versus Israel, but not very far after that, if the ICJ advisory opinion is not implemented, that makes findings of apartheid, or describes the situation as apartheid. So by my I remember doing a calculation, around 20 over 20 UN special rapporteurs have now called the situation apartheid. So I think CERD is looking, I mean, in addition to all of, the range of sort of NGO civil society reports, but also I think the mo South Africa and Namibia have both said repeatedly that the situation is apartheid. So if states which have experienced apartheid for decades, which CERD was instrumental in fighting, are saying it's apartheid, they're out of sync with South Africa and Namibia, the UN special procedures. And so I don't really know of any other comparable situation where the committee is so out of sync with other bodies, and indeed those states that were victims of apartheid as well. So I think they need to consider that. I would also highlight, in September, the UN General Assembly passed a resolution on the implementation of the ICJ advisory opinion, and that includes a mechanism, a proposed mechanism for the Article 3 violations. So that's there in paragraph 14, a mechanism to follow up on the violations by Israel of Article 3. So What does that mean? We don't know yet. I'm not sure what that mechanism is. I haven't heard anything as to what it might be, but a mechanism to follow up on the violations of Article 3. So the ICJ made a determination that there is violations of Article 3 occurring. Some judges interpreted that as a finding of apartheid. Others did not, but pointed out the pathway, the legal pathway in which you make such a determination. Others said it was tantamount to apartheid, or everyone agreed it was systematic discrimination. It was agreed it's at a minimum racial segregation. And so what is that mechanism? That mechanism will have to investigate the situation of apartheid as well in the OPT. So I think CERD, what is CERD's contribution going to be to that mechanism? It's not CERD that it's a different mechanism. So another mechanism within the UN is going to look at the violations of Article 3 as determined by the ICJ. So that inevitably is going to look at the situation of apartheid in the occupied Palestinian territory, because the ICJ has said it's a violation of Article 3, which includes apartheid also. So that will have to look at that situation as well. So I think it'll be interesting to see what the General Assembly mechanism is, and how it goes about its work in relation to the violations of Article 3.
To date, there are 182 UN member states who have ratified the International Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Racial Discrimination. And Ireland, if I'm not mistaken, is one of them. I'm wondering what influence countries like Ireland might play in prevailing upon CERD, indirectly perhaps, to come up with a finding of apartheid. And I'm thinking you may or may not want to comment about Israel's decision to close its embassy in Ireland, in Dublin. But there's clearly friction between Ireland and the State of Israel. But aside from that, which you may or may not wish to comment on, what role do countries like Ireland have to play in CERD's thinking process, or helping CERD to come along and evolve its position?
It's an interesting question. I mean, I wouldn't say pressure. I mean, it's for the committee. The committee makes its own decisions, etc. But I mean, I think if you look again at the history of Article 3, Article 3 was drafted adopted in 65. South Africa never ratified CERD. So Article 3 states parties particularly condemn racial segregation and apartheid and undertake to prevent, prohibit, and eradicate all practices of nature and territories under their jurisdiction. South Africa never ratified. So how was Article 3 implemented over all of that time when South Africa was not part of the treaty? It was implemented in relation to the obligations of the other states' parties to CERD. So for 25 years, CERD required states to report to it on their relations with South Africa, on their diplomatic, economic, and other relations with the apartheid regimes. So Article 3 reads, states parties particularly condemn apartheid. So a country like Ireland, in order to fulfill its Article 3 obligations, has to say, or has to report to the committee on how it is implementing the obligation to particularly condemn apartheid. In other words, not to recognize the illegal situation or render aid or assistance in its maintenance, as the ICJ sets out. Now, to be clear, this is about the illegal situation in the OPT. So states are required, I think, under Article 3 to report. I think in the report, states like Ireland could say that the situation of apartheid in the OPT has arisen, that the evidence is there, the sources are there. The UN Special Procedure Sources, South Africa, Namibia, the other organizations, and that there is an obligation on all states' parties to particularly condemn racial segregation and apartheid under Article 3, and that Ireland has to report, for example, on the Occupied Territories Bill, which is the domestic legislation that is there to prevent trade and other relations with in violation of the ICJ advisory opinion in relation to the occupied territory. So I think there is a reporting obligation when Ireland reports to the committee and other states as well. They can or they are required under Article 3 to set out how they are condemning racial segregation and apartheid in the occupied Palestinian territory. On the embassy, I mean, I think there's been some sort of diplomatic back and forth. I mean, the criticism, I find it surprising. I mean, why Israel has decided that Ireland's support of the advisor, of the ICJ or the ICC should lead to the closing of an embassy. Now, I mean, they have, there may be other issues that they might wish to criticize, but specifically the statement of the closing of the embassy links it to Ireland's intervention under Article 63 in relation to the South Africa versus Israel case. Well, we're not the only ones intervening. There will be probably interventions in favor of Israel as well. At least Germany said they would. So you're perfectly entitled to intervene in an ICJ case or interventions in the Gambia versus Myanmar as well. So that rationale that the embassy is being closed because we are intervening in an ICJ case when there are other states that are intervening, and that is a legal right in any case, similarly supporting the International Criminal Court arrest warrant. So the reasoning for me makes no sense.
Well, Israel clearly considers itself to be exempt from international law, and any attempts to enforce international law in Israel's regard is considered to be anti-Israel or anti-Semitic by Israeli authorities. It's simply beyond the pale to suggest that Israel abide by the
I don't know about that, but I mean, Ireland is perfectly entitled to intervene if we wish under the ICJ statute, and similarly, we're perfectly entitled to say we support the actions of the International Criminal Court. That's what we should be doing. So, to the extent that that is the reasoning given for the closure of the embassy, it makes no sense on any level to me.
David Keane, thank you so much for joining me on the Green Planet Monitor.
Thank you, David.
David Keane is an assistant professor in law at Dublin City University, Ireland. He has published a number of works on the International Convention on the Elimination of Racial Discrimination. We'll link to a few of those at greenplanetmonitor.net. The GPM reached out to CERD for comments on its December 13th statement under the Early Warning and Urgent Action Proceedings mechanism. It declined an interview. It for today's GPM, a listener-supported podcast coming to you from Earth Chronicle Productions in the Netherlands. Listen to, read, and watch more Earth stories at greenplanetmonitor.net. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube, and our home base, Blueberry. We're also on Facebook and Twitter, and Canada's Harbinger Media Network. I'm David Kattenberg. Over and out for now.
My name's Eric Swanson, and I'm a dad of two young girls. It was a game changer when we learned that $10 a day childcare was being offered to both our kids. And we want all BC families to have this option. To get there, BC has to do three key things: pay fair and consistent wages for all childcare educators, transition all existing programs to $10 a day, and plan childcare expansion more like we do schools and hospitals. BC's on the right track, but we need to go faster. Go to 10aday.ca to learn more.
This is Bird Note. Each season ushers in its own bounty of bird life. Winter is the best season to highlight North America's feathered thunderbolts, the falcons. Northern nesting species of falcons, like this peregrine we're hearing, move southward, closer to their many admiring observers. Hurtling through the air on blade-like wings, falcons rank among the fastest of all birds and the most adept at capturing prey in flight. One falcon much more prevalent across the U.S. in winter is the merlin. 10 inches tall with a 2-foot wingspan, the merlin chases down small birds from sparrows to sandpipers. Small but powerful, the fearless merlin will buzz even a huge eagle that enters its airspace. The majestic gyrfalcon drifts south in winter to the northern tier of states. larger than a red-tailed hawk, in a direct sprint, the gyrfalcon can overtake even the fastest duck. The mid-sized peregrine falcon nests in some locales across the country, but its numbers are greatest in winter, especially near the coasts. During its dive on a hapless pigeon or dunlin, a peregrine may reach an airspeed approaching 200 miles an hour. For BirdNote, I'm Mary McCann. BirdNote's newsletter delivers the wonder and joy of birds directly to your inbox. Sign up at birdnote.org to get a weekly preview of our shows, stories, photos, and more.